Hello everyone and welcome back to Semi Scribble Podcast. I'm your host Akinyi and today we'll be discussing Homegoing by Ya Jassy. First of all, welcome back everyone. This is our first episode of 2021. It has been a while since I last spoke to you just after Christmas. I'm happy to be back. I hope 2021 is looking a little bit different for you than what 2020 looked like. For me, no lying here, the beginning of the year seemed like just a continuation of 2020. But over the last 2 weeks or so, I've had a shift in mindset and that has helped me embrace 2021 and just be hopeful about it. And that sort of mirrors my experience with the book Homegoing. I bought this book, I think, in 2017, though the book was published in 2016, and it has been in my TBR for a long, long time. I finally decided to dive in because I know that Ya has another book, The Transcendent Kingdom, out, and I want to read that. But I told myself that I have to give Homegoing a good go first before I jump into Transcendent Kingdom. What happened with me and Homegoing? It just was a difficult book for me to get into. I would start the first two chapters and get stuck. I couldn't move on from there. And even as I was reading it for this podcast, I almost had a feeling that I was going to DNF it. But the overachiever in me decided to hang in there, and I'm glad I did. The first thing that helped me, which is not different or new for this podcast, is that I decided to pair the book with the Audible version or the audiobook version of the book. And let me tell you, Audible got me through the book. Maybe because trying to read a book that I found difficult to get into in the beginning of the year when we're getting back to work was not a good idea. Don't do what I did. Another thing is I started to shift my mindset about what the book would do for me, or rather how I should read the book. So what really helped is the family tree that you can find in both the audiobook version. There's a PDF attached so you can see the family tree. And in the book, it's right there at the beginning. Reading the book while referring often to the family tree helped me locate myself within the narrative. I decided not to look at it as a narrative that flowed from chapter one to the end, but it came across to me like a series of short stories or a short story collection, though there is a running thread of family throughout it, meaning that all the characters are related. So you're sort of seeing the progression of this family from Mame, who was the very first matriarch in this family tree, all the way down to Marjorie and Marcus. Once I did that, then the book made sense. I guess I'm just a little bit conservative. I want the story to really like flow from chapter one to chapter whatever to the end. I want to see the progression of the characters from the first chapter to the end. I'm really invested in seeing how characters develop. I'm really invested in seeing what the story looks like for them at the end. But this book doesn't really give you that, in my opinion. What it does give you is little snippets into the lives of these descendants of Mame as we move from the 17th century all the way into the early 2000s. Right here, I have to give a shout out to Smart Brown Girls Book Club because their syllabus on Homegoing also really helped me sort of organize my thoughts. And that's where I figured out the timeline from the 1700s to the early 2000s. Meaning when we first encounter Mame, it's in the 1700s. And when we finally conclude this book with Marjorie and Marcus, it's around early 2000. So what is the book about? The book is about, well, not what the book is about, but where the book starts. And that's another thing that made this book a little bit difficult for me to get into, is that the themes are not readily available on a platter for you. You have to sort of digest and then decipher for yourself what theme is standing out for you. So this book is generally telling us about a family, or what I'm calling a family, that started out with one character known as Mame. And Mame is in Ghana. And she has two daughters under very different circumstances. So the two daughters are Effia and Essie. They have very different destinies. One continues to grow up in Ghana, and another is unfortunately kidnapped, you would say, taken against her will, and shipped off as part of the slave trade to the US. Effia, who remains in Ghana, but even though she remains in Ghana, she does not escape the effects of the slave trade. What happens is that she is captured, but is kept in the slave trader's palace, and she ends up married to one of the officers, whose name is James Collins. Essie, on the other hand, is shipped off to the US. Then her line now starts to develop in the US. And when I say her line, I mean her descendants are therefore those people that we read about in the US. And Effia's descendants are based in Ghana. Interesting thing, though, is by the end, when we finally encounter Marjorie and Marcus, the two lines come back together. They come back together first in the US, but then they travel back to Ghana together, and that's the culmination of the narrative. It's actually beautifully a 360 development of the story. So we do get to come back full circle to where we started. Why the first chapters were very difficult is because there's a lot of traumatic things happening. There are wars that are going on between the different clans. There's kidnapping of one clan by another. There is actual domestic violence happening. And when I say domestic violence in this context, not really partner to partner, though there's some of that happening. There's also misuse of people who have been captured by different clans who are used as domestic workers, but essentially it's slave trade within the continent. That's how we get introduced to Mame, because Mame has been kidnapped from her clan and brought over another village where she's working as a domestic help, basically, in the modern context. That's what we would call it. She ends up having a daughter in this new village that she's in. Now, the daughter, obviously, because of patriarchy, is still accepted into the home, right, where she was born. But there's a very stark difference in her treatment and the other children. And at first, I was just like, okay, are we going to be triggered again about the mother-daughter sort of relationship in terms of how differently a mother can treat what looks like a firstborn daughter? Baba is Effia's mother, or that's how she's introduced to us in the first chapter. The chapters are named after the different characters that we are learning about. So in this chapter about Effia, we see that there's a really strained relationship between Baba and Effia, and Effia doesn't really understand why, though she extends a lot of grace to Baba and tries to just execute commands and instructions that she's given. And even Effia ending up in the hands of the slave traders within the Ghanaian geography is because Baba essentially sends her away or manipulates situations and comes up with machinations to get Effia sent away. And this is a theme that comes up in terms of destiny and fate, that you will still end up where you're supposed to end up, right? That even though it seems that you have escaped fate, boom, fate finds you. And this does come about quite clearly even with other characters. A favorite character of mine was James Richard Collins, who is from the line of Effia, actually decides to pick for himself his own quote-unquote destiny, fate. He wants to marry who he likes. He wants to choose for himself. This is at a point in time where arranged marriages were the norm for political reasons, for cultural reasons. James Richard Collins was sort of meant to marry a particular person in order to strengthen the tribe or to strengthen the clan. But he decides to do his own thing and definitely does this in a very interesting way. Yes, so James decides for himself that he's going to marry who he wants to from a completely different geography than where his parents expect him to marry, in trying to lead this different life from his prestigious clan. It still haunts him at the end of the day, because the repercussions of his choices are then reflected upon how his offspring, Abena, can actually start living her life. So it's very interesting to see how fate follows you. Choices have consequences, but eventually 360 still happens at the end of the day. as you're reading the book, you have a different character from the different sides of the world, essentially. So if you've read about Effia in chapter one, in chapter two, you read about Essie and her experience on the ship on the way to America as a slave. That was a really difficult chapter for me to get through. Yah is so descriptive in her language that I could smell this underhull of the ship. I could feel the nervousness, the confusion, the collective trauma that was there between these captured souls as they were being taken to America. And I could not imagine how these people not only went through that first trauma, but are now going to face another trauma. We really get to see the ills. Not that we didn't know, we knew, but to get to actually experience the day-to-day narrative of the ills of the slave trade through characters such as Kojo, through characters like Essie, Ness as well. We get to see that it was hell. And I think Ness actually describes one of the plantations that she's in or was in as hell. We get to see the different choices, the difficult choices that they had to make in deciding to run, if you could. And when you're running and it seems like you're going to get caught, how you would separate from your child in order for your child to have what you feel would be a better life somewhere else, and entrusting their life to somebody that you barely know who has an inkling of how to be free. That was a lot. It was a lot. Maybe that's why it was very difficult for me to get through this book. A majority of this book is basically, especially on Essie's side, because we start in the 1700s, remember, and we're working our way down to the 1800s, 1900s, back into the early 2000s, you get to see how each descendant still grapples with the effects of the slave trade, grapples with the effects of classism and racism and the traumas that they have and how that traumas are actually informing their choices. And you want to shake some of these characters and some of the characters who you feel really messed up do get some redemption at the end of the day, because we as the reader have the privilege of realizing where it is that these characters started from. So we can empathize a lot with how they are behaving. That aspect of the book is what now made it interesting for me and made finishing it a breeze, is because now I understood where Yah was coming from, or I think where she was coming from, is that by learning about your past is the only way that you can move forward. And though the characters themselves in the book, some of them did know through oral histories, through stories that the different characters, especially the matriarchs in the family, are passing down stories, right, to their descendants about their mothers or their great-grandmothers, passing these stories down. They do get to know about some of their history, but us actually seeing that history unfold, we better understand their choices, I think, than the characters in the books themselves do. That, to me, redeemed the book. I could then gladly finish it. And the ending is really beautiful. I think the ending was the best part for me. Usually the ending of a book is very difficult for me because, you know, you want to continue. But at this point, I was like, okay, this ending was really good. There's lots of symbolism for fire and water, which do come out from the beginning. There's, of course, the slave trade that happened via the ocean or the water. There's fire, which comes up in the very beginning chapters of the book, how Mame is escaping. You know, the element of fire and water pops up throughout the book, but then, boom, at the end, it comes full circle, and then I'm like, okay, I see it now. The full picture comes to you at the end. There are some light moments in the book. There are characters that make you laugh. These are not really main characters. They're periphery characters, and that's their duty. I really, really loved Abena, though Abena, I think, got a really short end of the stick. I loved her character. I loved her decisiveness. I loved her ambition, and I genuinely just loved the way her chapter began, where she's talking to herself as a 25-year-old. Remember, this is around the 1800s, and she's not married, and she's having this discussion with herself, wondering what next and how to move. I want to keep this short and tell you that homegoing was difficult for me to get into, but at the end, it made sense, and I'm glad that I stuck to it. It not only made sense, but it was an enjoyable read at the end, and so I'm glad that I stuck to it. There are characters in this book that I will not forget. The framing of the book was different, so if you're looking for something different to read, Homegoing is a good book to read. If you haven't already read it, it will shift your perception of how writing should be done. I like that. I loved jumping from the different characters when I understood where Ya was taking us at the end. Yeah, those are my thoughts on Homegoing by Ya Jassy. I am really looking forward to looking into Transcendent Kingdom. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. You know the drill. If you'd like to reach out to me, please, you can find me on Instagram at podcast_semi. I'm also on Twitter at podcast_semi. If you prefer to write me an email, you can do so at semiscribbledpod@gmail.com. Thanks, guys, and I'll see you next time. Bye.